It's a, you know, it's a great point actually, because the second part of your point, what kind of investment do you make in yourself? Like, you know, people talk about stress as this huge negative all the time, and like, you can't improve without stress. There has to be a level of stress, whether you're trying to build muscle, your brain, whatever. The key is to make it so it doesn't debilitate you though, and like to
Yes.
remove, you know, have the times of relaxation. So in terms of like what it takes from an investment standpoint, I mean, it takes a huge investment. I mean, it's all encompassing, right? Like, this just becomes your life, morning, day, night. Like, it's everything, right? Like, I mean, yeah, and you really try to work a balance with, you know, maintaining a family and then your own personal health as well.
There is a depth and a breadth to our lives that largely goes unexplored. As an equestrian life mindset coach and host of this podcast, I am here to lead you on that exploration. Deep conversations covering topics in and out of the show ring with industry leaders and unsung heroes alike, sharing their stories and what makes their journey unique, but relatable at the same time. We all have stories to share and lessons to trade. Something we've learned from a horse or from each other. So relax and be ready to listen with more than just your ears. I'm Tracy Mitchell. Welcome to Hitting Your Stride. I think it's fair to say that Scott Seisler is equal parts passion and purpose. After spending time talking with the man behind Mad Barn, it became clear to me that Scott is driven by a simple guiding principle: to make life better for horses. We kick off our conversation with Scott telling us about some of the things you can learn when a standardbred broodmare is your first horse, and things unfolded from there. The patience he learned from that mare helped as his life in the equine industry began. He told me the lessons he's learned about being an entrepreneur and how it's important to identify your weaknesses and try to improve on them. The passion Scott has for where he currently finds himself is also on display as he talks about how his education hasn't stopped. And education is a central theme in his life. Not only is Scott working towards completing a PhD, but he's made it Mad Barn's mission to making sure customers get as much out of their educational components as they do the products they've purchased. As he puts it, he wants people making as informed a decision as possible. It's one of the most technically involved episodes I've ever done, but Scott sprinkles just enough tidbits of wisdom in there to make it appealing for everyone. So let's dive deep in on this one as we welcome Scott Seisler to Hitting Your Stride. Well, welcome Scott Seisler to Hitting Your Stride. Thank you very much for joining me today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Yeah, this is going to be great. We'll learn about some supplementation for horses and your story behind the brain of it all. So I'm looking forward to this. All right, Scott. So you've talked about what it was like having a mare as your first horse and what you learned from her. What were some of those lessons and how do you think it prepared you to go down this particular path that you're on now?
That's a good question. In terms of preparing me for this path, I mean, that's kind of probably a long way down, but I think just from a general, having a mare first, and you know, it teaches you patience, empathy, compassion, like all those wonderful things. And then to, you know, breed a, and then patience being the biggest one, you know, to breed a mare, you're waiting almost 12 months to have the foal, then the foal comes. And, you know, in my case, it was a standardbred racehorse. So of course, young guy, you're just like, oh, I want to get to the races. I want to get to the races. But you're, you know, good 3 years away from that, from the time you breed to the maybe 3 years getting there. And then honestly, I think the biggest thing, you know, the compassion side and the communication side, to really learn, like to watch a mare and foal and how they communicate with each other and teach, you know, how the mare teaches the foal and behavior, which then led me into a lot of like different readings just on horse behavior. Monty Roberts was a big influence when I was young, and, you know, talking about join up, and you could see it, you know, you could see how the, you know, the mares within the group and between the mares and foals, they would communicate, obviously non-verbally, and, just learned a ton from that. And I mean, still even today, like, sorry, I'm going to get a little off tangent here, but, like when we look at performance horse, physiology, nutrition, what we do now, like one of the big areas we're really interested in is bioinformatics, or just informatics, to get the information from the horse, because they can't tell us, they can't speak to us. And so to be able to better understand, how much rest they need. If you look at, the human side, I'm really getting off topic here, but like if heart rate variation and things like that, and we can get that kind of information on the horse, then we can have a much better understanding of optimizing their performance and mostly, honestly, their welfare, that we're taking the best care of them that we can. So that's it has influenced me strongly, I guess, from starting at that stage versus just jumping into like riding or driving a racehorse or something like that, where you don't have that the patience and experience beforehand.
Yeah, exactly. And those mares, they teach you a lot, whether you like
They do. And actually, when I was in university, I did. I worked at Glengate Farms, which is now it's no longer, but at the time, it was one of the premier breeding farms, standard breeding farms in Ontario. And did foal watch because it was such a great fit for being a university student. You basically work 40 hours a week at 3 nights. And they had 140 brood mares at the time. And so there was a lot of different brood mares interactions. And so we went from, our tiny little farm of only 2 brood mares where I grew up on to 140 to see it's quite a different level scale of operation for sure.
Totally. That's
Yeah, and
great.
they do really teach you because there's different personalities from from
Yes.
mares.
Yes. I love the standardbreds. I worked on a couple of standardbred farms in my younger years as well. And they teach you how to handle horses, man. Like these mares and their yearlings, it's a whole different thing. And yeah, I learned so much about handling and just horsemanship when I was doing that. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it is, and a lot of hard work too. I mean, like you said, they can't, especially the young ones and the training and everything that's involved with it. But great experience. I mean, just tremendous experience through the whole thing.
Great. Okay. So it says in your bio on the Mad Barn website that you're not just book smart and that you also have horse sense. How does having one complement the other, and how do they work together to your benefit?
Yeah, it's good old marketing companies wrote most of that, but I mean, I get why they wrote it. I don't know how smart I actually am. But I think the thing is, I spent a long time in school, and actually, it was my father-in-law he has a PhD in pharmacology, and some kid asked him how long he was in school, and he told him it was like 25 years or whatever, and he's like, "You must be some stupid to have to take that long to learn something." So I don't know if I'm just slow. It takes me a long time. I never did finish my PhD, but the ability to take what you learn, I guess, academically and actually apply it, I think is really what that's coming down to is the, and I've had both because I've been in a research setting and then actually had to apply it out in the field, both directly on farm and different levels, doing technical sales. And that's, I think, really what marries the two together is just the ability to transfer the knowledge out into practical application. And really is kind of the crux of what we do at Mad Barn. Some of the stuff we do in the back end, which we'll talk a little bit here, I think, about people really don't know, when you talk about modeling and things like that, they're like, oh, I don't, how does this apply? Well, that's really where we come in, is to make it apply to the situation and again come to improve the welfare and the feeding outcomes for horses everywhere, essentially. So, I mean, it's a bit of the jack of all trades, master of none. It's like, and then honestly, when you run a business like this, you become very much a generalist, like where a PhD, like when I was looking at Soleno proteins, for instance, it was a very, very narrow topic and very specific. And then you come to run a company and you have to know a little bit, from accounting to everything under, production and the science as well. So you get to integrate it all into one thing, which hopefully then we can transfer out to our customers as well. Even just things as simple as young people that maybe want to start a boarding barn and sitting down and have a business discussion with them. Sometimes it's not about the nutrition anymore. It's about financial viability of doing a small business and things like
Yeah.
that can help with
Well,
as well.
it's kind of cool too, because I was thinking a lot of it is communication. So like when, and from your knowledge to your business, I mean, everything can be very micro, but then there's also a very big macro view of everything, right?
Yep, for
Yeah.
sure.
Yeah. So, and I think too, being able to communicate that, like that book smart into something that the everyday layperson would be able to understand that could nicely apply to their horse.
Yeah, and I mean, one of the nice things is like just from my background, they talk about entrepreneurs, and you should be young when you start because you're probably going to fail a few times, and being young is it's helpful in doing it later in life. Whereas I started actually much later, the company, and actually from that side, I think it's hugely beneficial just the experience I had working for the different companies and the different levels. And I had great exposure to some extremely, extremely intelligent people who you would bring in on a sales call, for instance, as the tech person, and watch them do a great technical presentation, but had very limited ability to actually communicate what needed to be communicated to the person they were talking to. And you're like, this, you know, it's great to have all this knowledge, but if you can't transfer it to the person that's using it or needs to use it, then it's really worth, it's actually of very little value. I don't want to say it's worthless, but it's, the value increases exponentially once you can transfer it out in the field. And I think, you know, that's really a goal of ours. It's a huge part of what we do is like this knowledge transfer. And we're just getting underway with like the Mad Barn Academy. And if you go to our website, I think there's 400 blog articles on there now currently, which is, you know, all different topics, breed topics, all kinds of things that cover more than nutrition. But we also want to dive into some courses as well, so that people can come and take on their, and do at their own pace essentially, but so that they can learn more just about fundamental nutrition and physiology and just taking care of horses.
Yeah. Wow. Mad Barn Academy. That sounds really cool. I'll check that one out. That's a great idea. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's a ton of resources on our website. It's always getting updated. Like my business partner, she's incredible in terms of the content she's putting on there, just the development. And like, it's her really that drives this education, the outreach portion, and this transfer of knowledge. She just does an incredible job at it. So she's been a tremendous asset to us in helping us achieve, or at least working towards our goal of improving the nutrition of the majority of horses.
Okay. Awesome. All right. So what was it like when you came to the tipping point between deciding to make nutritional supplements a full-time job or stopping altogether? Can you take us through your thought process and how you came to your decision?
You know, when I was doing my PhD, they started a program called the Highly Qualified Personnel. And it was with the realization that coming out of academia, they needed to instill some business acumen into some of these PhDs. It's an amazing program. It's still going on. It's a tremendous one. And forcing up into that point, because I went back after I had worked for a number of years to do my PhD. So I had a lot of this training already, but it was in that time period, essentially, that it transferred over. So I guess I kind of always knew that's where I wanted to go. Like, I think to your question you asked about what, I either had to shut it down or make it a full-time job. I mean, it was always my passion, so I always wanted to make it happen. It was just a question of whether I could figure out a viable business model that people would want to make it happen. And it was during my PhD that I was like, okay, I think, you know, we figured out how we can do this. A way to fundamentally fund all the research we wanted to do, that I wanted to do, and do this extension, carry it out, and be, you know, it's got to be profitable and deliver that is, and kind of once I get that whole plan put together and I was able to start seeing the vision for it, that's, I guess, when the tipping point came. Plus, there's also just, you know, having worked in industry for a while, there was support there, having a very supportive spouse as well is useful, and supportive family, because yes. It is, I mean, it's super time consuming and it's financially constraining in terms of starting up a business from scratch that you're bootstrapping together. I mean, it's not like there's a lot of money kicking off the thing. So it's, I mean, those are all kind of factors that played into, okay, we're ready to go. We can make this work and move forward and hopefully be successful at it.
Cool. Okay. So what external factors played a role in your choice and how did you weigh them against what your own desires were?
Well, the external factors, like, again, really were, whether it was gonna be financially viable to do it, you know, whether we could compete, can we do this? I mean, it's not like there aren't horse supplement companies that already exist or horse nutrition companies that were already in the marketplace. So, you know, we're coming in and we needed to take a different approach, I guess, to say, like, to compete and to provide a service and products that people would, there would be tremendous value to them. And I think, hopefully, I think we've done that and are doing so. So it's kind of a culmination of everything, like your own, like, desires. And I don't know if, like, you know, you pick and choose. I spent a lot of time reading about finances and just, you know, Warren Buffett was a big influence, Benjamin Graham, even like that old school kind of stuff. And I know this is a bit far from business, but just some of those very basic concepts in finance are so, so important to just functioning as a business. You know, really influenced that, okay, I'm ready. I can do this. I can take this all on and move forward with it and have a better chance of success. Like, There's a really good podcast. I can't remember the guy's name, but he started a restaurant in Chicago, and they basically book 3 months out in advance. Like, you have to be next quarter booked in, and so they're full up all the time. Elena is the name of the rest. I think Elena. Anyways, that person not important. But one thing that stuck with me there, he says, when you give these stats on small businesses that fail and the numbers, I think by 10 years, they say about 99% of the businesses that started have failed. And like, that even extends to the S&P 500. If you're looking at the stock indexes, how many of them within 10 years won't be there? The numbers are actually staggering. But he makes the point in there, he's like, how many of these businesses just didn't have a sound business plan when they started? Right? Like, it was just a bad idea to begin with. And they hadn't thought it through, they hadn't planned it out. So you talk about external factors, I think a lot of it was that it was planned out and it had, like, thoroughly thought through numerous times over and over again, because I had been doing it on a very small scale. So when you make a mistake, it was a small mistake. It wasn't, catastrophic. And then eventually you're like, okay, now we're ready to roll here. And I think that's, I don't know if those are all external factors, but it's eventually you got to pull the trigger. And actually, Dr. Lyons from Alltech, sorry, I'm just jumping all over here,
That's
was
okay.
another huge influence in terms of, I mean, he's done a lot of amazing things. Alltech, when you look at the company, the growth trajectory of that company is just phenomenal and what they've done. But I mean, I can only hope to do a fraction of what that man accomplished in his lifetime. But the one thing that always stuck with me is, don't worry about getting it right, just get it going. So I guess it goes a little bit against what I just said about getting this experience wrapped up. But at some point, you just have to get it going. But it is a nice balance between, okay, I've planned it enough, and yeah, we just need to move forward. And my business partner does make the comment sometimes that we're building the plane as we're flying it sometimes. Like, we're assembling some pieces here as we're in full air flight here. But
So,
that's a necessity, I think, of any business from time
okay.
to time.
So to go back to the tipping point when you were formulating your business plan or your business model, were you sort of flying this plane by yourself at this point, or did you bring in sort of mentors or idea people to kind of help you get this vision you had off the ground?
Yeah, so I mean, I mean, no one flies solo. I mean, again, you have support of family around you that are, in the background, so there's always that. And then, like, my professors and then my business, back to Alltech, I worked for Alltech for a while. They have what they call an internal mini MBA. And so we go through that. It was just an intensive, like, 2 weeks at a time program of, like, basically working towards an MBA. You just don't get an MBA because it was an internal company thing. And I totally lost my train of thought here. But
That's okay. I was asking about the tipping
yeah,
point.
sorry. This is
No, that's
completely off topic.
okay. The tipping
Yeah.
point, like doing it from like how you got it going.
Yeah, and again, I think it was just like just a number of years doing it very small and just kind of figuring out the market space. So again, like, I grew up in the racehorse industry, and then I met a barefoot trimmer in Quebec, of all places, like through a friend of a friend, just kind of how you organically grow these types of things. And she introduced me, honestly, to the whole metabolic horse world, which apparently it was much bigger than I ever imagined it was. And that, honestly, that's probably the major tipping point. She's like, we need a company like you with the things you're trying to do, and just this, like, very research scientific backed approach to how you're formulating these things and how you're approaching. And some common, I don't want to say common sense, but a little bit of that, just as we how we approach feeding horses, really kind of became that tipping point. And so the influences within that, yeah, we did, like, it was mostly me. Like, you can, I think there is still the blog post on there. The original name, we called it the Fat Man Performance Formula. So obviously I recruited some outside help because I'm terrible at marketing, because that was my idea, that name. And so when I was doing my PhD, my initial plan, as I had laid it out, was, okay, I'll wrap my PhD up and finish up, and I'll have already kind of launched the business simultaneously, and all nicely meld together. Unfortunately, the business took off a little faster than I anticipated, and the PhD suffered on the backside of that. But so I did engage a marketing company to help just with branding, and ensuring, that, yeah, so the Mad Bear name was really a culmination of just a couple of us coming up with better ideas, because apparently Fat Man's a terrible name for a product or a business. So that, I guess, from the starting point, was that it was just me. and people, resources I could draw on. And fortunately, again, because I had worked in the ag industry and big agriculture, I had a ton of contacts as well, which can kind of gave us a bit of a competitive advantage in terms of sourcing ingredients and being able to be very cost competitive with like multinational players, which if I didn't have that background, we wouldn't be able to do. Like, you can't just call up some of these big companies and order from them, right? They just don't do that. They won't sell to just anybody. And but because I knew everybody, or not everybody, but a good chunk of the industry, you could get ins where they normally wouldn't sell to somebody as small as we were when we were starting out. Now, fortunately, we've grown exponentially since then, so we now actually have some buying power and things like that that allow us to leverage and even help with our pricing even more going forward.
Okay, awesome.
And I think I got way off track, and I don't know that I ever really answered your tipping point question, but
That's okay. It's all good. So, Scott, in what ways did learning from Dr. John Kant during your time at Guelph University shape the way you think? What did his mentorship mean to your development? And how do you approach being a mentor yourself?
that's a lot in one question, multiple questions, I guess. So we'll break this. I mean, Dr. Kant, I mean, for anybody that knows him, they'll know exactly what I'm talking about. This, somebody to be that smart and as humble as he is, and the ability to just transfer knowledge to people from the level he kind of just lives at down to the rest of us is phenomenal, quite frankly. And so I don't want to compare him to Elon Musk, but we actually watched a podcast with Elon, and you read all the news about Elon. Sorry, this is off topic again too, but and then like the way they paint him, and then you actually hear him speak and like read the book about him, and you're like, these aren't the same thing at all. And you start to wonder about what people write in the media, like how much of it's even true. Point being, he was on a podcast, and he a number of times he came back to and said, for when you get back to first order principles, and he's referring like to physics and things like that. But John does that as well. It's just like, there's just these undeniable laws that you can't break in terms of like the physical world we live in. And to really kind of think in that methodical way and also like a mechanistic way. So this modeling all really stems from him, his influence, because I mean, that's what he's known for, mainly ruminant mammary or lactation physiology modeling. But the ability to systematically think through a problem, ask questions to get to the, basically to ask a question, formulate a question well enough to get to the answer you want to, whether it be through a research program or asking another person questions and things like that, was his biggest influence. And yeah, it's just in the way he just deals with people and just his whole demeanor and everything, it just is phenomenal. And his desire to teach, right? Like, he just wants to pass that knowledge on and teach people, which is fantastic. I'm most admittedly, and you can ask my daughter about math sessions with me, most admittedly, I'm not a great teacher. I mean, I try. And again, these are things we all work towards. We do find our weaknesses and try to get better at them. So I like, when you ask me about it and how I approach mentoring other people, I mean, I have a whole team, obviously a nutritionist. I was just saying today when I met with them, I need to meet with them more and talk to them more and interact with them more, to do some more mentoring and things like that, which is an area I probably need to improve on. But it's also an area too where, not to get too much into my personal side, but like the whole imposter syndrome, right? Like, you suffer from that a little bit at times. And so you're like, oh, how could I ever mentor anybody? I don't know anything. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm just skating by here, basically. But, and it's the wrong attitude to have. Mike Birbiglia did a great stand-up. He's a stand-up comedian. And he goes, not to be falsely humble, he goes, I recognize, he had thousands of people in the stands. He goes, that you're all here to see me. And not, Mike saying this, he goes, but I also know that every one of you told one of your friends who you're going to see, and they went, who? So it, I don't know, yeah, it's the human being humble, I guess it was a big thing. And just in the face of yeah, his extensive knowledge, I guess he is just a great mentor. And like, you look at the people who have come out of his lab over the years too, and they've all gone on to do great things. Just so, and you have to attribute a good chunk of that to him. Just even so, it was honestly, it was an honor and a privilege to get to work with them for as long as I did.
That is so cool. And I love what you said about the imposter syndrome too. I mean, I think it's so true, you know, like whether it be early on in my days as an equine massage therapist or like as a life coach or any of the thing that I'm going on, like, you know, sure, you question like, do I have what it takes? Like, who am I to give people advice? But at the same point in time, I've talked to my mentors who have like 30, 40 years of experience doing this, and everybody experiences. It's crazy.
Yeah, it is. I mean, well, I think you'd honestly have to be a sociopath if you didn't have it at some level at some point in time.
Yeah.
But yeah, I get, at the end of the day, you just kind of have to overcome it and keep moving forward. And yeah, it's
Trust
it.
yourself, believe in what you do, believe in your message. Yeah, it's a whole thing. Okay. So, Scott, do you consider Mad Barn to be a whole horse care brand?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously, what we focus on is nutrition, but again, if you look at what we do as kind of fundamental, really what we do is research. And again, I think people, like a lot of people, especially they only know a superficial, they'd be like, "What? You guys are just a supplement company." But it is, we like again, the articles we publish is a general knowledge of covering everything. So, history of breeds, things like that, we'll talk about or publish articles on because we think it's important for people to know or there's interest out there. So we want people to have good scientific information on it in a very readable format, I think is the most important part that it's easy to get to, it's easy to read, and it's easy to understand. So from that standpoint, it is very much in even like some of the stuff we do with high performance. So working with the Canadian eventing team and things like that, where we're, heart rate monitors are coming, like using those again, to get more information. We don't, I mean, there's no benefit to us in terms of like a monetary benefit to Mad Barn by using heart rate monitors with the eventing team, but it's because we do want to be a whole horse, company. I don't even want to call it a brand, just like what we do though is for improving. And it's not just high performance horses, it's your family pet horse as well too, which is the majority of them, quite frankly. We want to make sure that you take the best care of them you can. So again, lots of things on trimming horses, hoof structure and just general health, vaccinations, all those types of things we encompass in there. Even though we don't sell any of that, we don't provide those services even. But we try to give as much good information because we have the resources that can write intelligently on those topics and put it out there for people in one nice, easy place to go find.
Yeah. Okay. Gosh. All right. So, going on a little bit more regarding like what your company offers, how do you what sorry, what do you find are the common missing components to a horse's diet?
Well, so if anybody's ever seen one of my nutrition talks, it's salt, number one, I think is like the number one missing component. We laugh and, I think part of the problem is we anthropomorphize horses too much. And we, the human side, we're like, oh, you hear sodium's bad for you. You get too much in the human diet. But horses, because they don't get any in their natural diet really to speak of, and are heavy excretors of sodium or salt, typically never have enough. And actually, we're just writing up a case study. Young nutritionist Jessica that works for us, I was just down in Florida not too long ago, and it was, I don't know, it was like it was Florida. I mean, it was sunny, but it felt like it was raining. It was that humid. Horses are standing still 8 o'clock in the morning sweating. And of course then the conversation of anhidrosis or non-sweating comes up, and they're like, well, yeah, this big problem this time of year is getting the end of summer. So these horses have just been sweating all summer, and eventually they just stop. And I was like, it's because you guys aren't feeding enough salt. Stop wasting money on all of these goofy anhidrosis supplements and just feed these horses more salt. So Jessica went back and basically just loaded her horse with salt. So she got up to 120 grams a day. So I don't know if we put this in context for people because people are often like, oh, I give my horse 2 tablespoons of salt a day. You're talking half a cup of salt per day, and the horse sweat right through the whole time, no problems. Because eventually, like any biological system, right? If the animal's not consuming enough, it's going to go into conservation mode. It has to stay alive, right? So then eventually it just has to shut down the sweating, even though it's the main thermoregulatory method of cooling itself. if the sodium's not there to allow it to sweat, it just becomes this last ditch effort to survive. And so it's such a simple thing. And then people in Canada, where we live here now, it's getting cold. So they think, of course my horse doesn't need as much. But even think about the amount of people putting blankets on horses now and how much those horses are probably sweating because they're, daytime temperatures do get 10, 15 degrees. The sun comes out and these horses have rugs on them or blankets on them and they will sweat underneath. They don't have to be lathered up and soaked, but they could be sweating quite a bit. So salt being the number one, and we don't even sell that. Although we are talking about making it an offering just to kind of drive home the point of get more salt. And then the other big one, and this is kind of, it's why the company exists. So it's not new information. We presented it at Equine Science Society this year. It's trace minerals and vitamins. And again, so if you look at the horse's natural diet being forage, pasture, what's in it? Well, almost always it's short on zinc, copper, iodine, selenium would be your big four that you're not going to get out of your forages. And there is a fundamental problem, I think, in just the entire horse industry in that we have horse feed companies and this idea that we go buy this complete feed and they're called complete feeds and you look at the tag and they contain zinc, copper, iodine, selenium, plus the other ones, calcium, magnesium, and salt. And we just automatically assume, well, that's enough. It's in there. It's been formulated. That must be enough for my horse. And it's not. Like, it's not near enough unless you were to feed what the feeding label recommendation is, which is, up to 10 pounds a day, which there's actually no horse should be getting 10 pounds of commercial feed a day, quite frankly. Like, there's no need for it. Even a high performance racehorse does not need that much commercial feed. So you end up with all these diets that basically are lacking in the trace mineral and vitamins and salt. Now, why it persists largely is because deficiencies in any of those things take a long time to rear their head, ugly head. Like if you have a, say, particularly if there's like just a low grade deficiency, which we'll see with zinc and copper a lot, you start to see things like weaker hooves, like thoroughbreds get, all thoroughbreds have bad feet. And you're like, not if you feed them properly, they don't. And if you trim them properly, they don't. There is genetics for sure and hoof structure, but I would say a bigger component is the physical, trimming, concussion, and diet plays the biggest part in it and getting those things right. And when you do get them right, you'll see dramatic changes in hoof structure and function. So this is almost like, it almost lines up with pets, dogs, and cats and the human diet. So if you really look at the population-wide basis where typically it's too much protein and energy, and not enough micronutrients in their diets. And you're seeing the same outcome in a population-wide basis where over 30% of the horses now are considered to have equine metabolic syndrome. Over 10% of the horse population in Canada, the US anyways, that we have data on, gets laminitis every year. And so when you just start to think about those numbers, that's 1 million horses a year suffer from laminitis. And anybody that's ever had a horse that's foundered or has laminitis knows how extremely painful that is for them. You just think about, like, if you had to bear all your weight on your fingernails and then start peeling them back and off, how painful that would be. And that's what we're doing to these horses. And often, not to get too soapboxy here, and often it's out of kindness. Like we think we're doing what's best for the horse and it's not. And I think, this is really where our mandate comes in to provide sound information and education that, this is, feeding them this way is actually better. Forage first, lower quality forages for a lot of these horses. And then we just supplement the minerals and vitamins. And that's really all a lot of them need. Maybe a bit of flax or a bit of oil to put a shine on them and, just to give them a little more fat in their diet. But realistically, that's all most horses need.
Wow. Yeah. And it's,
and that was a long way to say minerals and vitamins and salt.
Okay. So to go back to the anhidrosis thing. Years ago when I was massaging and one of my clients, it was middle of summer, it was hot. And this was like a big jumper. And the groom all of a sudden pulled out a bottle of Gatorade. And this horse had had issues sweating. And they thought, I'll give him some Gatorade. Now, I'm like thinking that's the ridiculous thing because the amount of sugar and all that kind of stuff. So for anybody listening, like, what do you think about giving your horse Gatorade if they have problems sweating in the summertime?
I wouldn't give any horse Gatorade. Just one, it's formulated for humans. And so and actually I'm going to circle around to the sugar comment here in electrolyte formulations, but I wouldn't do the Gatorade thing. Just again, plain old salt, whether it be feed grade salt you get from a feed store. I think, you know, it's like $6 for a 25-kilo bag of feed grade salt. If you prefer the really white stuff, you can go to Costco or one of the shop centers, get a 20-kilo bag of the purified white, whether it's I, you know, this is the other one, is was it iodized or non-iodized? I'm like, I don't care. Like the amount of iodine in salt's not enough to cover, meet their full requirements typically. It's better than nothing if you're not feeding iodine, but even like, you know, say you put a mineral vitamin on top of the salt with iodine, it's not going to be too much. You're better off probably giving them a little bit extra. So when you just start talking about, okay, Gatorade for horses. Now, one place, you know, I would consider Gatorade for horses is horses working hard, in particular, like endurance horses or 3-day eventers, race horses, these ones that are both from a recovery and a preparation standpoint. The sugar actually can be highly beneficial, particularly endurance horses where you're doing, you know, 50 to 100 miles. You want to give them a fuel source that's readily available to them that they're going to burn up. Where you don't want to be giving those is horses that aren't working, and then you're just loading sugar, causing an insulin spike for no reason at all, and to get them basically what only thing they really needed was salt in the first place. Because it so if but again, if you come back to like Gatorade, for instance, it's again formulated for humans. Humans sweat mostly water with a little bit of salt. Horses sweat a lot of salt and with water, and it's almost like the same. It's not hyperosmotic, but that's not even the right word. My goodness, I'm struggling this afternoon. But the concentration of salt is much higher in horse sweat than it is in human sweat, is the point I'm making. And so we need to replace more of it. And then when you look at a fundamental horse diet, there's loads of potassium in a horse diet. There typically needs to be more magnesium supplemented, but there's usually enough to meet the requirements even in a basal diet. And then calcium and phosphorus, there's usually a lot. So if you're looking at those, what's not there is the sodium or the salt. So for the vast majority of horses, just giving them salt, that's more than enough. Give them free access to water. That's really all they need. And then when you get into the performance horses, you add an electrolyte with some sugar in it, you can use for specific purposes and reasons. But again, you want to formulate it for a horse, not for humans, because you want the
Gotcha.
concentrations of your electrolytes to be much, much higher than they would be for humans.
Okay. Good advice. So, in other words, everybody, feed your horses more salt. Okay. So, Scott,
Yeah.
how satisfying do
You
you
like you
find?
legitimately can't overdo it.
Okay. So, how satisfying do you find being the face of Mad Barn? And what kind of investment of yourself do you find it takes to keep the company on a steady growth trajectory?
So let me clarify, when you say investment in myself, what are you referring to investment wise, investment wise,
Well,
or just everything?
the amount that you put into like you yourself into the business. Like, I mean, when I got the idea to contact you, I saw a commercial of you talking about your company on social media. And I'm like, huh, that guy sounds like somebody I want to talk to. You're very receptive, the way you spoke, your energy behind it, and it was your company. And I thought that is kind of cool. I want to talk to that guy.
You might be the only person in the world that's ever said that. So in terms of, I guess, to the first part of your question, being the face of Mad Barn, I mean, it's a double-edged sword. Of course, I like it because I love where it's going. I love like to have a vision over a decade. Well, it's been longer than a decade, but to see it, and it's getting to the point finally where I want it to be, where we have getting a very robust research program in place and making progress down on that front. So, I mean, I love that part. The part, like when you say being the face of Mad Barn, I mean, it really is a learned behavior because, like, and people never believe me when I say this, but I'm actually quite introverted and shy. Like, you learn to do presentations and you learn to sell. I mean, anybody can learn a skill and do it and deliver it, right? Whether that's their natural way or not is completely irrelevant. So it wouldn't be my natural way. Like, if you went back to my 4th year undergrad and watched one of my presentations then to now, like you would be appalled at what you saw. Like, I mean, they're bad enough now, let alone back in like early undergrad. It was horrific. And over time you've learned, and I've learned the value of it, right? The value of being able to present and convey information and trying to persuade is not the right word, influence people to, you know, basically do the right things and get that information across to them. So I mean, from that standpoint, it's hugely valuable. And In some ways, it's more rewarding in the fact that like it's kind of been a learned skill versus just being a natural trait where like it's not my comfort level to go out and to do things like this, to sit here on a camera and know that however many people are going to watch this and judge me on things I say or how I look and all those things. That's not something I find super comforting, but you get over it to do it because again, I have a very clear goal that I want to achieve. And that's to improve the welfare and nutrition of like as many horses as humanly possible, which hopefully is all of them if we can.
Yeah. So I have to say that you're doing a
I don't know
wonderful
if
job.
that fully answered
Yeah,
the
you're doing a great job.
holy.
And I love the fact too that it's what was I going to say? When you talked about being uncomfortable, I mean, that is something that, just everybody in general, but especially when you have a vision and you're a leader and you're going out there and you're building something and you want to see something grow, you have to do something uncomfortable every day. If I firmly believe if people are sitting around and feeling too comfy for too long, then nothing is happening in their life.
It's a great point actually, because the second part of your point, what kind of investment do you make in yourself? People talk about stress as this huge negative all the time. And like, you can't improve without stress. There has to be a level of stress, whether you're trying to build muscle, your brain, whatever. The key is to make it so it doesn't debilitate you though, and like to
Yes.
remove, have the times of relaxation. So in terms of like what it takes from an investment standpoint, I mean, it takes a huge investment. I mean, it's all encompassing, right? Like, this just becomes your life, morning, day, night. Like, it's everything, right? Like, I mean, yeah, and you really try to work a balance with, maintaining a family and then your own personal health as well, which, like, quite frankly, took a back seat for a long time. It's only been in more recent years I've gotten a little more fo back focused on it. And be like, because the realization of you can't perform optimally unless you take care of yourself first and foremost, right? And through exercise, getting adequate sleep, just eating appropriately, and all those things, it's a disservice to the company as a whole that if you don't look after yourself. It's when, but again, coming back to just like this was an actually another podcast or a book. I can't remember what it came out of. And one guy was extremely wealthy, and he was pontificating that you should spend probably at least half your day, between reading and sitting on a park bench philosophizing about life. That's, that would be a great thing to do. And they kind of made these guys that were kind of knocked on him is like, yeah, the guy's a billionaire. Of course he can sit on a bench for half a day. And like, and I think he's forgotten his early days when you work 20 hours a freaking day to get this to, that you could have this time to sit on a park bench. That luxury, I guess. I haven't gotten there yet where you can just take half days and be like, oh, this is nice. But yeah, the investment you do, it's continual. And honestly, just like even with the team and myself, you talk about just like ways to improve your efficiency, focus on, as particularly as the company grows more and more, there becomes more and more distractions or things you could be doing. And you really have to stay highly focused on the things that are really going to move us forward and allow us to achieve our goals. Because it's so easy to get caught up in distractions in the day-to-day and those things that aren't necessarily moving the company forward. So that's probably like the biggest focus, particularly right now at this stage, is just like keep the thing going forward in the direction it needs to go.
Okay, awesome. All right. So, with other options available to horse owners in this part of the market, what are you wanting people to get from a different sort of supplement company, such as Mad Barn?
So it's interesting, like I always when you call us a supplement company, it almost irks me a little bit. I'm not
Okay.
because I don't want to be known as a supplement company. Is it sorry, not this isn't a criticism of the question at all, because I get that's what we sell. I 100% understand that's what we sell.
Gotcha.
But it is that, like, when you really look at what we're doing as a company, like I like to think of us, back to your other one, our whole horse care brand or a horse, nutrition company holistically. Like, we have madbarnfeed.com, which I don't even know. The dollar value is big. That's all I know. In terms of development, in terms of investment, we give that away for free. It has over 4,000 feeds in it now, that again are fully parameterized. I think probably one of the, not probably, it would be the most extensive horse feed database that exists out there, which we give people access for free because we want them to make informed decisions when they're feeding their horses, and we want them to make the right decision. I think we're currently around 10. I think it's 8 PhDs, 5 vets. So this is more than 10. They don't all just do diets all day long, but and a handful of master students who really are just dedicated. In the last 2 years, it's been over 20,000 diet evaluations we've performed for people absolutely free of charge. So, I mean, it was a business model that was built around, okay, this is what we want to do. This is what we wanted to deliver. You know, will people buy enough stuff from us to support this and to support the research program we want? So I guess that's where I say we're a different kind of supplement company because, yeah, we're very, I make no bones about it. We're good at marketing. I'm not good at marketing. My business partner is excellent at marketing. But you have to be. Like, we're never going to get there if we don't tell people our story and we don't get the information out there. And when we talk internally, I basically, you know, I'd say to them, you know what? Yeah, we have great products. Of course we do, but so do a lot of other people. I mean, I don't sit here and say, oh, I'm the best at formulating a product ever. Like, there's lots of very smart people out there make very good products in the industry. But what really differentiates us is the customer service aspect, just the care for the customers, because again, and we just talked about this before we came on here about how basically the culture within the company is the same for everybody. We want horse owners to do better, to like have healthier, happier horses. I mean, that's really the mandate of it. And the more we can do to drive that, the better we are going to do as a company. And so it's not about jamming products down people's throats or selling products. It's really about improving the outcome for horses. And there you go.
So yeah, just a couple of times this week, actually, knowing that I was going to be talking to you and I'm out at Barnes massaging some horses, and two or three times people brought up the topic of your spirulina product. And I haven't owned horses in years, so I'm sorry, I'm a little behind on this. It seems to be popular. They were like all in love with it. And they're saying about, you know, how funny it was because their horses were finished eating it and there was green all over their face. Can you share with me and the listeners, like, what is the spirulina product and what does it help?
Oh, that's, yeah, spirulina. I mean, well, spirulina is basically, like, I guess you call it blue green algae. Okay. It's a very specific strain of algae. And what does it help? Like, apparently everything under the sun. Like, so, I mean, so there is a lot of research behind spirulina and the different things that it does. But it does, like, it does seem to very much help with, like, you know, things, anything, inflammation, like allergies, respiratory, like reactivity, it seems to tone that down almost like DHA or the, you know, those long chain fatty acids. It seems to act very much in that way. It does have a high protein content as well, although typically you're only feeding 20 grams. So that's not that big a component, but, really, it does seem to be very much like the respiratory system and then kind of like almost hypoallergenic thing, or like if your horse does have allergies, it seems to tone all those things down, or any kind of level of reactivity or inflammation, it seems to knock down a little bit. Even in human nutrition, they call it a superfood. It really does kind of seem to fit that bill of a superfood of, and I don't think it's any one thing in particular. I just think it's a very nutritious supplement. And to your point, it is very, very green and makes a mess everywhere. It's there's some very specific physical characteristics and properties of how it sticks to things and then just turns everything green as well. Okay. So it's an interesting one for sure.
Okay. Well, their horses enjoyed it. Okay. So Scott, last question here. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just gonna say it's become hugely popular. I mean, I was actually shocked how popular it became. Like, it's one of those ones where, we have that kind of whole single ingredient line where, if there's good scientific merit behind it and we can be price competitive in the marketplace and basically supply for people the things they want, we will. And spirulina very much fit that bill. And then, yeah, the popularity of it actually like just shocked me in terms of how much it's taken off.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So last question. Looking back to when you were first making up supplements for your own horses and how this experience has grown and changed since those days, how would you characterize what you've gotten out of it all?
We've gotten out of it all. Well, I mean, what we've gotten out of it all is in terms of like just better, getting better and better all the time. I think, you know, when I think back to the early formulations, and some of this was just like lack of experience, lack of knowledge. I mean, I was doing this when basically when I was an undergrad, I was doing some of the formulations. you still get influenced by like what you call, I guess, just common knowledge and heuristics, or things people say, oh, you got to do these. And you didn't, and I didn't always, like, at the time, well, I wasn't selling it, so it didn't really matter. It was just for my own stuff. But you didn't really dive into, you know, is this really the right thing to be doing? Are these the right ingredients to choose? And there's been this kind of progression as we move from, like, just doing it myself to into a business, that just being much more thorough and getting around, I guess, getting over kind of the common knowledge stuff and pushing aside and be like, no, just stay very, very data focused. And don't get sucked into, just because, like, I don't want to call it a placebo effect, or just like people, because a lot of times you'll hear people, oh, this worked wonders for me. You see it all the time. Testimonials are super popular for this reason of, oh, this did amazing things for me. And then you look at the science behind it, like, no, this probably really didn't necessarily, but you paid a lot of money for it, so you probably feel like it needed to do something for your horse. And so you convinced yourself of it, just to kind of remove all that. And just really strictly stick with the science. And then interspecies too, like, because there, a lot of times there isn't a lot of research in horses per se, the ability to integrate knowledge and use models and different things to bring it across to the horse and make it applicable to the horse, just the development of that. And not to get too much into it, but the ability to take large amounts of information from all over and then get it applied to the horse in a very efficient manner, I think, has been probably the biggest development in terms of what we can do and how we deliver it out to the consumer.
Awesome. Okay. So how can people reach out to you? Like I said, I'm pretty sure, I know you guys have a large following, but if someone is happening to listen to this and they've never heard of Mad Barn before, where can they find you? And more about this Mad Barn Academy. I think this is interesting. How can people find that or sign up for that?
Well, the Mad Barn Academy, everything's on our website. So, I mean, just okay. Go to madbarn.ca, madbarn.com, either one. And you can get to us that way. Honestly, that's the easiest way. So if you want a nutrition consult, like there's a form to fill out. You can give us the horse's information. If you don't like filling out forms online, you can just email us and say, hey, this is my horse's, what we're feeding. Or pick up the phone and call. I mean, we, like you said, they do, all our nutritionists do book one-on-one consults with people if you prefer just to talk to them, which a lot of people do. And then the content, yeah, the academy in terms of is just all within. If you cross the top, hit the nutrition tab, there's drop downs in there. There's product comparisons, which I think is a tool that people find hugely helpful. Where if you want to, you know, compare two products side by side, you put the feeding rates in and it just gives you the entire drop down nutrient composition. So you can see side by side comparisons of what's in them. I think is a hugely valuable tool. MadBarnFeed.com isn't one people get to as much, probably just because it is a feed formulation model that, like, most people probably don't have much experience using. But that's why we have a team of nutritionists, though, so you can let them use it for you. We set it up in there, though, so if when you get your diet done, if you'd like a second opinion outside of somebody at MadBarn, you can take all the information and go off and you can consult another expert in the field, or you can go to social media and get the army of armchair experts that will chime in on anything on social media for you if you want.
Exactly.
But anyways, honestly, that's the easiest way is through the website to get all that information. And we're more and more working on, there should be a podcast coming out soon as well from Chris Mortensen, who's just joined us, which will be hopefully he's got a hugely popular one. Also, I've forgotten All Creature. No, that's not the right one. Anyways, I can forget the name of it. He's going to kill me when he sees this. it's an All Creatures one. Him and his partner do an amazing job. They'll have a huge following. Anyways, he's got great experience. And so there'll be, you know, multiple platforms, multiple ways to get this information, because that really is the key to us, is to get it out to the people in a usable format for them. So whatever that format they prefer, we're trying to hit them all, essentially, that we can, you know, basically achieve our goal of improving the welfare and nutrition of horses everywhere.
Well, this has been great. And your passion for the product and for your goals, like you just, what you just said, for horses everywhere is very audible. And I'm sure all the listeners will sense that as well. So I just wanted to thank you so much for your time and coming on here and having this conversation with me. This has been great.
Yeah, thank you very much, Tracy. I appreciate it. And yeah, it's been good talking to you.
Awesome. Well, you take care.
Yeah. Thank you.
So there you have it. I have some great interviews lined up for future episodes, and we'll be covering some pretty interesting topics, as always, with the intent to open and engage the horse world on a wide variety of issues. So until next time, keep your eyes forward and continue to hit your stride. To stay current with Hitting Your Stride, subscribe on my website or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. If you like what you've heard here today, make sure you share and leave a comment to help guide future episodes and widen the audience. And be sure to check out social media to keep up to date with Equestrian Elements Life Coaching.